Just a year after the streets of Hong Kong were filled with protests, the city has gone quiet. In the wake of the outbreak of COVID-19 and the implementation of sweeping national security reforms imposed by Beijing, the population is now resigned to a new way of life. The Wire's Sarah Martin spoke with Anthony Dapperan, Hong Kong-based writer and lawyer, about how the city has responded to the changing political climate and the threat of the pandemic.
We never had any hard lockdowns in Hong Kong. We've had quite a long period of time where there were various restrictions on public gathering and dining out, and schools were closed for a while. But we've managed to keep infections low and the deaths were fairly low, I think from memory around 200 deaths overall. And now we're in the middle of a vaccine rollout, which has certainly been pretty smooth compared to some of the problems that have been experienced elsewhere in the world.
Are the COVID restrictions being weaponized in any way to control the population in the sort of fallout of the pro-democracy protests?
Certainly, the bans on public gatherings have effectively stopped any kind of public protest in Hong Kong. And these were put in place around March last year, in the early stages of the virus outbreak, at a point where, you know, you could argue from a public health point it was justified, but they're still in place now. So it's now currently still illegal in Hong Kong to gather in a group of more than four people outdoors in public, whereas you're able to gather in scores, if not hundreds, indoors for things like functions and religious gatherings. So it's a pretty odd situation. It seems clear that the government has been using this public gatherings ban to prevent any kinds of protests as they've been pushing through a number of controversial political reforms in the meantime.
On that, just a couple of weeks ago, we saw a change to the election system over there. What are those revisions?
What the government is essentially trying to do is to very significantly scale back the scope of Hong Kong's already very limited democracy. Hong Kong has the equivalent of its parliament called the Legislative Council, which has been at best only semi-democratic. About half the seats sort of elected have been elected by popular vote, and the other half of the seats were selected by these sort of small circle special interest groups called functional constituencies. Now, notwithstanding that, the pro-democracy parties have always been able to win a very strong share of the popular vote and have ended up with a significant minority chunk in the legislature, always a minority. But following the protest movement in 2019, the pro-democracy parties won a huge landslide victory at local council elections here. And that then frightened the government because it looked like the pro-democracy parties might even be able to mobilize to win a majority in the legislature in elections that were due last year. And it seemed that Beijing wanted to do anything they could to stop that. So they delayed that election and have now essentially reformed the Legislative Council so that an even smaller number of the seats will be popularly elected. And not only that, candidates will be screened. So you won't even be allowed to run in that election unless a pro-Beijing vetting committee approves your candidacy. So it effectively means the end for popular democracy as we would know it in Hong Kong.
Those decisions, along with the national security law changes that occurred last year, they are receiving a lot of international pressure and condemnation, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They've received strong criticism and a number of measures that have been taken by governments from Australia to the UK and the US and Canada and beyond. With some of those are intended directly to provide help to the Hong Kong people. So things like in the UK, they have opened up a path to residency and eventual citizenship for some Hong Kong people. The US has applied pretty significant sanctions on some Hong Kong leaders and PRC government leaders to punish them for what they say has been an infringement of human rights in Hong Kong. And just more generally, to the extent that the national security law poses a risk to the interests of foreign governments and foreign citizens, such as opening up the potential for the suspects to be extradited from those countries to face trial on political charges in Hong Kong, those countries have been offering political asylum to various people, so they're providing support in that way as well.
But there are some pro-democracy agitators who have stuck around in Hong Kong, and they've been caught up in the court system. What's been the latest there?
Many have stayed and they are in the process of being prosecuted for various actions that they undertook during the protest movement of 2019 and in the fallout last year. And so there are many, many people, politicians, activists, protest leaders, who are now caught up in the criminal justice system. Either they're sitting in jail awaiting trial, or they've already been prosecuted and jailed. And a couple of really notable ones. Last week, a group of the most senior pro-democracy activists and leaders in Hong Kong, including people such as Martin Lee and Margaret Ng, two very senior barristers who've long been democracy advocates in Hong Kong, and other prominent figures, have been found guilty of illegal assembly charges arising out of a peaceful protest in 2019. Also, last month, 47 pro-democracy politicians have been charged with subversion under the new national security law for holding a primary election last year with the aim of trying to attempt to win a majority in those elections that were eventually cancelled. Most of those 47 are now sitting in jail, denied bail, and awaiting trial, although a few have been released on bail. But now the situation is that almost all of the most prominent pro-democracy politicians and activists in Hong Kong are either sitting in jail awaiting trial, have already been prosecuted and are in jail, or are awaiting sentencing on various charges.
Collectively, all of these things must have an impact on the mood of the people who live in Hong Kong. What are you seeing there?
Certainly, there is a sense of people feeling that Hong Kong is not the place it used to be. A lot of discussion about immigration. Some people have already actively started taking up the opportunities of things such as that British offer of residency. Others are very actively talking about it. There's also a bit of a sense of hopelessness, in the sense that everything is ultimately decided by Beijing, and there now seems no channel for political protest or other channel for input from the Hong Kong people themselves. So there's a sense of resignation and hopelessness, I think, to a certain extent. But people are certainly feeling that Hong Kong is not the place it used to be. And of course, there are some who are welcoming the return to stability and are hoping that they can get back to making money, which is one thing that at least some of the Hong Kong population have always been interested in as well. But I wouldn't say that that's the overwhelming majority by any means.
Anthony Dapperan, Hong Kong-based writer and lawyer, speaking with The Wire's Sarah Martin.